What is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 189. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that of course gives us a little kickback, and it's no cost to you. It just gives us a little bit of kickback to, you know, keep the podcast on going, I guess you would say. And with me is my co-host Derek. What's up, man?
Oh, not much, man. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we took a, well, I took an entire week off of everything. I like disappeared for a week. Went on a little, I guess you would call it, I guess it's a vacation. It wasn't like relax. I did a lot of like adventure climbing waterfalls and stuff,
that's what a vacation is.
Yeah, it was honestly the first time I completely disconnected. Usually when I would go on vacation, I would wake up early and like the first 2-3 hours of the day, like I would do work, like I would post news on the site and check emails and do all that stuff. But I completely, like, I put an away message, like an away autoresponder on my email, everything, like did not worry about work.
Like actually look it up.
Yeah. I had to look it up on Gmail, like how to do that. But it was honestly so good because, you know, everything has gotten so crazy with the X570 stuff and just the amount of content we're putting out. And it was just like, I needed, before we got crazy busy into, you know, we're getting to back to school and then we're getting into holiday and you know how busy that is. And we'll get ready for CES after that. It's just going to be really crazy. So I felt like I just needed 5 days to myself. And I actually stayed at an Airbnb in the middle of the woods where there was no service, no Wi-Fi, like, it's crazy to think about, like somebody like me not having Wi-Fi, but it was so great. We're back now, but it was just a good week off from everything, not having to worry about the site and all that. It was just awesome. So
I feel like somebody like you needs that more than anybody else, actually. Like I know that you're a connected person, you live a connected life, but taking a few days a week to just like reset yourself actually I think makes you appreciate it more and you get into it more. That's my feeling.
Yeah, honestly, like I would love to stay at this like cabin that I stayed at before, I just stayed at, like it was what I needed, you know what I mean? Like you said, like I live such a connected life, like every day I'm checking emails as soon as I wake up, like, you know, like before I even shower, like I'm walking downstairs on my phone making sure, like, you know, anything going on with the site, and then like obviously all the work that goes into the site and everything else that I do. It's like, it was needed, man. And it feels so good to be back and everything like that. But it just gave me that like break, I guess you would say, that I needed. Because like I said, even when I went on vacation before, I would always wake up early, check emails, do 2-3 hours of work, and then like go hang out with my friends or go hang out with like my girlfriend or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was never like that, just absolute relaxation. So I felt like I needed that, so it was good.
Awesome.
So yeah, so let's jump into tech here. We got a lot going on. It's a Gamescom week, which means a lot of gaming related hardware stuff, but also some gaming related stuff we want to talk about. But we'll jump into our reviews for the past, I guess it would be 2 weeks. We'll start with a custom RX 5700 series graphics card. And this one comes from Sapphire, and it's their Pulse line, which has been out. This is kind of like their low cost, I guess you would say cost effective line. And we took a look at the 5700. The biggest thing with all of these aftermarkets RX 5700 XTs is they're going to have a much better cooling solution and they're going to be quieter. At least they should be. That's the thing to take out of this. So if you were looking to get a 5700, you're going to want to get one of these cards. We talked about it multiple times that you don't want the reference card because it's just badly designed. At least thermally, it's badly designed and it's just loud. And in my opinion, I don't like the way it looks either. this Pulse card, I can't say that it looks amazing by any means. Like, it's not, it doesn't jump out at me.
Actually, it looks a little strange to me. Does it feel like there's too much plastic?
It's like, the shroud is very plasticky.
That's what I mean. Like, the shroud is really big over top of the, like, it goes really high over top of the bracket.
Yeah, so a lot of card manufacturers are doing this so they can fit in larger fans. So they can, instead of making the card longer, they make it taller to fit in larger fans that are more effective and are more quiet at a lower dB.
Rather than doing a triple fan?
Yeah, rather than doing a triple fan.
It just looks odd, though.
Yeah, it's like I said, there are a lot of 5700s series cards that use this exact same design. Hmm. And on the NVIDIA side, there are some that use like just the taller design with the two fan design.
Yeah, I feel like it's usually open, though. And I guess this is too. I don't know. It just feels like it's a big box. That's what.
Yeah, it's kind of like me. All of these cards too are pretty boxy. Yeah, if that makes sense. Yeah. But you do get their dual X cooling solution, which is the two cooling fans. I think it's a good card. It doesn't jump out at me as like if I'm looking at 5700 series cards, it's gonna, you know, really jump out at me. This was our first 5700 card that we've had into review. So going on that, it does do what the 5700 non-XT is supposed to do. It's supposed to compete against the 2060. And it competes pretty well against the 2060, actually beating it in a lot. Now the 2060 Super, which is the 2070, yeah. Really, it kind of trades blows a little bit. But it's good for what it is. It's $50 cheaper than a 2060, and it's around the same performance. So you're getting something 2060 there.
Super, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's more expensive than the 2060. Do I remember that right or wrong? The base 2060.
Let me look it up. Okay. Base 2060 right now. Let's see. It's $339.
Okay.
So
this is just a little more.
Yeah. So this is a little bit more, but it's cheaper than the 2060 Super. Yeah. It trades blows. It's a little bit less performance than the 2060 Super, but you're still getting a lot of value there for what you're getting. I think, you know what I mean. Yeah. It beats the 2060 in all of our tests. So
if the Super line never came out. And the way this was originally positioned, it would have been probably
a runaway success. The Super line makes everything super confusing because again, sure a 2060 Super is technically a 2070. What AMD was trying to do was go after the 2060 and 2070.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I think this is a good card overall. Like I said, it does what it's supposed to do. You get a custom cooling solution. You get a better design card. Again, like I said, it just doesn't jump out at me like crazy. You know what I mean? But you do get a better design card and everything like that. You do get a factory overclock, which is going to give you a few more FPS than, say, buying a reference card or a card that's non-overclocked. So you get that as well.
Well, you're not going to thermally throttle as much, probably, as the reference card. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah, and then... Sapphire is actually working on a new version of their Trix software. We all know Sapphire Trix for like a long time to be able to tune your card and all that, but they're working on a new version, which I actually really like the design. If you are familiar with the Trix software, it's like very 2010-ish. Like it looks dated to me and everything like that. So they've come out with a very clean design, and we have screenshots of their new software. And what they actually do in the software, they have this new setting. I forget what it's called. Think of it. But they have this new setting which Trix Boost, which actually adds different resolutions. So like when you go into a game, you know, you have 1080p, you have 1440p, you have 4K. And like those are the only resolutions that you're allowed to use. With the Trix Boost, you actually get... it will add resolutions depending. There's like a slider in the software, and it will, you know, set the resolution for what it is. So if you're running 4K, instead of selecting 4K, you select like this a little bit lower resolution, and then it upscales it to 4K for you on your display. So you render the game at a lower resolution, which will give you more FPS. And we actually tested it. You do get more FPS out of it.
I'm having a hard time understanding how this is not just... What do you mean it's upscaling? Upscaling is a term, like, used for when the display or when the item isn't... That resolution is in its natural state. Like, so it fakes it, right, by smoothing. It's something that's done with, like, the display itself when, say, right now the most common would be it's technically a 1080p, but it upscales to 4K, right? So, yes. Or like yeah. the display device will upscale it for the monitor. So how does this, so this is when you have a 1080p monitor, it'll upscale the game to 1440p? Is that what you're saying?
No, so what I'm saying is it's going to render the game at whatever resolution you select. So
regardless of the display?
Yeah, so well, it's not going to give you the option of a 4K if you don't have a 4K display. Does that make sense? So if I have a 4K display, instead of running at, what is 4K? 30, 35, 60
I don't think that's actually what 4K is, but roughly 4,000
pixels. Yeah, so it's or like we'll say it's just 1080p, for example, right? 1080p is 1920 by 1080. It's 38, okay. 40. Yeah. So by downscaling, I'll render the game at 1728 by 972, and then that image will be upscaled to 1080p on my monitor. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And the way they do that is with the Radeon image sharpening. So it doesn't look like, you know, when you take something that's low resolution and blow it up on a big monitor, it's going to look blocky. So what they do is in the software, they give you a little slider that says, okay, I want 90% quality and my performance is, you know, it's a performance to quality slider. It's kind of cool for people who, you know, want to run a game and maybe like they're looking to get 4K, like looking to game in 4K, but they're not hitting 60 FPS. So this will enable that. I don't see it for people who are gaming, specifically on this card, you know, who are gaming in 1080p, because in all titles you're going to get over 60 FPS. You know what I mean? But if you were looking to reach a certain plateau, this will give you like an extra 6 to 10 FPS in games.
So, okay. So I come at this from a home theater perspective, and so when you upscale something, it is the final resolution, the higher resolution ish those pixels aren't really there, they're faked and sharpened, and it's a lot of tricks. It's not, the data isn't actually there. So basically this is creating, it's rendering a lower data image so that it can do it faster. And then it's upscaling it, so it's just adding in pixels to make it the higher resolution, and then sharpening the final image.
Yes,
so that it looks right. So
yeah, it's kind of, like I said, it's not like,
it's gonna this feel blurry-ish, I bet.
Yeah, it didn't. It because I mean I had the quality set at 90, and I'm upscaling 1728 by 972 to 1920. By 1080, so it's not
it's not a huge difference.
It's not like I'm massively downgrading. You know, as I move that slider over and say I was, you know, doing 800 by 600 to 1920, I'm sure I would see a difference. Again, I don't think this is going to be like a major thing where people are going to be like, oh yeah, like I'm gonna, you know, do it at that low resolution to get that higher.
I guess it allows you to like play the game and pretend that you're at a higher resolution.
Yeah,
because you're not seeing that resolution. The data's not there.
Yeah, the thing that I again say would it be used for is say you're playing a game and it's like your favorite game or whatever, and you want to play it at 4K, but you know you're getting 52, 53 FPS. You drop this down. You know, you drop your quality down a little bit, and then you're doing like 64 to 65. That's a noticeable difference as you get over 60 FPS. So I think that would be the use case for this. But it's something that, at least, like I said, it's part of the software. The software is free, and their new software looks, at least in my opinion, a hell of a lot better than the older software.
Yeah. It kind of looks to me like a blue gray version of the NVIDIA control panel, actually.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little more modern than that, but...
Yeah, a little more modern. I like the modern look in all, in my opinion. Okay. It's just, it looks better for me that way. But it's something that they've added. Like I said, I think this card... how much is it over MSRP? It might be at the MSRP.
$50, was it?
Yeah, it's $10 more than the MSRP of the RX 5700. So for 10 extra dollars, you're getting a custom cooling solution, you're getting an overclock, and you're, at least in my opinion, getting a better design, plus the Trix software, which you can have or not have. So I think that's a pretty good, you know what I mean, a pretty good deal. $10 over, which is kind of surprising, because we'll talk about the next card that we reviewed, which is $20 more. Usually $20 is where like the custom cards start at. But $10
is a no-brainer. Like, you just buy that card. Why on earth would you save $10?
Yeah, and the biggest thing is too is like you are getting the overclock, which is going to give you like 2 to 3 FPS more in games, but that's 2 to 3 more FPS. Like, it's just, you know, and it's going to run cooler and look better. So
longevity.
There is RGB lighting on this card with the Sapphire logo on the side as well, for those who, you know, want the RGB.
Get that shine.
Yeah, get that shine. So that's the first one. We'll be taking a look at a 5700 XT this upcoming week, and we'll tell you about that as we get to the end of the podcast here. But I took a look at another graphics card, which is a RTX 2060 Super, the first one that we've taken a look at. And this one comes from Gigabyte, and it's their gaming OC8G, as the name implies. It is overclocked. It does have a custom cooling solution. This is $20 more than the reference card. And again, this one's just like a no-brainer as well. $20 extra. The cooling solution is really good on this. It's their WinForce 3X cooler. So this is the implementation that we're used to seeing, or more used to seeing, where we see a longer card with three fans, and these fans spin, the center fan spins in a different direction, so you don't have turbulence in between the three fans. So they've done a lot with this cooling solution, and this is a cooling solution they've used for a couple years now, and it just works really well. And I like it. They've used the same design on all of their cards. So you can buy a 2080 Super that looks exactly like this, minus like maybe some RGB effects.
That's cool.
But yeah, so it's, like I said, the 2060 Super is, as we said, technically a 2070. It's going to give you really good performance. You know, if you're looking in this line, there are a ton of cards out there already, but I like Gigabyte's implementation. It's $20 over the reference design, which again is not super expensive for what you're getting. It does have RGB lighting on the side as well. And this is a true two-slot card. So especially if you're building in mini ITX or smaller, you know, cases, you technically, with the room, you only have room for a two-slot card. And so many of these cards are like 2.5 slot, 2.7 slot, which is odd. But because the shroud is bigger and the fans are beefier, I guess. But this is true two-slot, so you don't have to worry about having that extra room at the bottom. So it's something that I want to point out with this card, because again, especially like EVGA, like most of our 2060 Supers are three slots.
It's not a three slot plate, but it's a three slot card.
Yeah. But for this, like, you know, 2060 Super is going to be your 1080p at high frame rate, or 1440p at like 70 to 90 FPS. So this is like a good, basically the good mid-range card. More like I said, it's basically effectively replacing the 2070. So it's like, it is that performance card, that, you know, we've talked about, the 2070 being that card. That's the mid-range card you get. This is kind of like the new mid-range card you get if you're not going to go for the 2070, you know, which is a little bit more expensive. Like, again, this is $419, so it's not all that expensive either.
It's just, like, just again, into the, it's kind of getting expensive though.
It's a little expensive, but I think that you're going to get a lot out of this. Most people still are not gaming at 4K at all. 1440p is kind of the sweet spot, I would say, now for most gamers. So, you know, you're getting 70-90 FPS, that's fine. Or if you're doing like a high refresh rate monitor, you can, you know, easily pull over 100, getting into 120 with this card on, you know, most titles as well, especially esports titles where you would want that really fast refresh rate and everything like that. So yeah, like I said, I like this card. And the big thing, if you're comparing this to a 5700 or 5700 XT, they're very close in performance. You can look at our graphs and things like that. The only thing that this card has, or the 2060s in general, or NVIDIA RTX cards, is they do have ray tracing. So if you did want to play certain titles that have ray tracing or DLSS, this card has those features. Nice. So that's something to think about, especially if you're doing first or, you know, single player games, like you're playing Battlefield and you want to turn ray tracing on. It looks beautiful. And especially if you're at lower frame rate, like 1080p and 1440p, it's worth turning it on if you want the game to look prettier and just have a better experience. So that's something to think about with the, you know, if you're looking at getting either a 5700 series or a 2060, 2070 super, you know, the RTX or the RX 5700 series cards don't have any type of ray tracing or DLSS. So something to think about.
Yes.
But yeah, but good. We have so much competition now in the mid range. It's like, it's a win-win for us consumers because obviously the prices of the NVIDIA cards have gone down. And then with AMD cards, they are also very affordable and they're not like the old AMD cards. Yes, they're not like beating, like crazily beating the NVIDIA cards, but they're good value for what you're getting. And with the custom models out there, you have a good choice through all the manufacturers to get what you want. You know what I mean? It's not like you're only limited, you know, with the Radeon 7, you could only get it through AMD. Nobody else made it. You know, nobody else made a custom version. So,
right.
So we have custom versions. So it's pretty exciting. And then, or go
ahead. I was just going to say, and it's nice that these cards have come out to actually force the price drop for NVIDIA.
Yeah, yeah. So we like that as consumers. So I took a look at the fastest M.2 drive that I've ever reviewed. And we've talked about it before when we initially did our X570 stuff and the Ryzen 3000 series launch. But finally got around to reviewing the Aorus NVMe Gen 4 SSD. This is one of the first PCI Express 4.0 M.2 drives, and it's very fast. It's using the Phison, calls it the Phison E16, that's what everybody's calling it.
Okay.
And there are a lot of drives based on that. The big thing that really distinguishes this drive is that it has that massive copper heat sink. So there's 70 grams of copper on this drive. In my opinion, it looks really good, but it's, I guess you would say it would be kind of hard to match with a build if you're not really going for that look, I would say. You know, but
true.
It's a heavy heatsink, like it's really heavy. The only thing that it's kind of, that heatsink retains heat. So, you know, when I was doing my testing, when I was ready to pull this off, like it was hot. The drive doesn't throttle with the heatsink on, yeah, or anything like that. It doesn't get too hot, but that heatsink gets hot. That's the only thing you have to really think about with this.
You would think it'd actually be, I mean, it's nice that it's nice and thick, but the fins are still really thick. You would have thought they would have cut those fins thinner to, yeah, let a little more that heat escape. But
yeah, what's nice is, you know, the heatsink is optional. You can use the ones that are on your motherboard.
Right.
I did test it that way. The motherboard heatsink was fine. It didn't throttle or anything like that either. We received a 2 terabyte model, which is as high as this one goes. It's just, like I said, it's just a really great fast drive, and it's one of the things that I get super excited about because, like, this is the cutting edge. I mean, X570 is the only platform that you can use this on. It's the fastest consumer available M.2 drive out there, or one of the, I mean, there's a bunch of them, but, like, you know, this is the fastest that we can get right now on a consumer platform. So it's really exciting. You know, at max, you're getting around, you know, 5,000 megabytes a second read or 5 gigabytes a second read. So it's super, super fast. This one does come with a 5-year warranty, and the terabytes written, or TBW, that's like the rating, the endurance rating, is 3,600 terabytes, which is very high. So
it's a few bits of data.
Yeah, yeah. So, like a Samsung M.2, like their Samsung, I think it's the 840 now, 850. They're rated for like 1,200 terabytes written. So this is much more than that.
Yeah.
So that should definitely give you peace of mind and everything like that.
That issue, that was a really big issue when solid states came out, was the endurance on them and the worry, because they actually were dying a bit. But seems like that has really, you know, they've pushed the boundaries on that quite a bit, and it's not really a thing to worry about anymore.
Yeah, I think with how Flash has developed, and you know, we're progressing, you'll see higher and even higher and higher ratings and everything like that. We did test this in PCI Express 3.0 as well, and it performs just like the highest performance. Like, it basically goes up to the max that you can do on PCI Express 3.0. It is backwards compatible too, so for those who are wondering, you can use it in a normal you know, a normal PCI Express 3.0
Z390 slot. System or...
Yeah, or you can do, yeah, like, you know, any of the Intel, anything like that.
Well, actually, yeah, so anything Intel.
Yeah, you can, you know, if you were looking to upgrade in the future, you can buy this now, and then, you know, if you were going to upgrade later, you'll be ready to go. But it's a great drive. It's not cheap by any means. The 2 terabyte one we reviewed it's $459.99, so it's not cheap, but it's cutting edge. I mean, right now, it's crazy to have that amount of speed, and you know, we're maxing out around 3500 megabytes a second on PCI Express 3.0. We're by no means maxing out at 5000. This is Gen 1, and if you remember, like, Gen 1 of, you know, the original, like, it was like 1000. We were really excited for that, so we're five times that now, and it's going to grow in the future as we get better controllers and as things progress. So if you, and the thing is too, is you have to remember that you need not only an X570 motherboard, but you need a third gen Ryzen part. You can't use the PCI Express 4.0 slots on an X570 motherboard unless you have a Ryzen part. So something to think about. But if you are building a Ryzen system, I would go for the 4.0 drive. It's just faster, and time is money, you know.
Yeah, and it's really cool to have.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, Windows is going to load super fast. Games are going to load.
Yeah.
Those damn loading screens on Battlefield, which are horrible, would load just like be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can skip through all that stuff. So really cool drive. Probably one of my favorite products I reviewed this year. I just like it. You know, so
it's cool. It's flashy.
Yeah. And then you took a look at an AIO from Cooler Master. Yeah.
I did.
I think, didn't they show us this at CES? Right.
I mean, maybe a version of it.
I think it was prototyped, but you can tell us, you know, tell us a little bit about it.
Hard to remember back that far, to be honest, especially with all the stuff we see. But so this is the Cooler Master Master Liquid ML240P Mirage. I mostly referred to it as the Mirage during this article because that's a lot of name. I don't know where Cooler Master, their naming is kind of getting carried away these days, but.
It started when they started adding master to everything.
Right.
It was like the keyboards were the master keys and then another name and then like whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, is this the master liquid? Like, it makes sense, but at the same time, with your name being Cooler Master, which is already two words, then you add another big word,
like a product
master,
name,
whatever.
Then,
Yeah, so
I would have probably just called it the Cooler Master ML240P Mirage. But hey, so Mirage is, I actually like that they included Mirage. They haven't had a moniker like that in the past, so that was useful for me as a writer. But anyways, it's a 240 millimeter rad equipped AIO, and it's all the ARGB goodness that everybody needs these days. All the kids. The big difference between this and the previous gen, it's kind of just an upgraded pump, mostly. It's still the dual chamber design that they had before that was like kind of a runner-up still to some of the better pumps. But it did well, and they're not getting sued for copying anybody's work. Yeah. So it's the dual chamber. They've shrunk the height of the pump housing itself, though, so that's nice because it was pretty tall before. And instead of an acrylic top that was just kind of backlit with the Cooler Master logo, they've done a cutaway that goes down to a flow meter, like a little pinwheel flow meter that's in the stream. So it looks like it's probably in the inlet. I think it's in the inlet. So that'll tell you that it's obviously working, that the water's flowing, and then there's ARGBs in that chamber as well. And then it's got ARGB fans, which are custom fans. They don't even have a name for them. I had to do a little digging for this, and it's just a product number, but they're specific for this cooler that's a square fan. They don't do a square fan, square bodied fan. They're pretty nice. They're pretty quiet. Honestly though, the RGBs in it are pretty brilliant. I've not seen as many as you have, Bob, but these ones really, they stood out quite well to
They've
me.
They've done a good job. I've reviewed a few of their ARGB fans. I actually have their entire new line nice. Sitting next to me. I haven't even opened them in like a month. but yeah, they've done a really good job. I was a little bit worried because their software wasn't done before the hardware was done, but their software wasn't done. But now that the software, I assume it works pretty well. But they've done it just that, like, the fans aren't like crazy, but they just do it, like, they look good and they actually do a good job with what a fan should do. I would, you know.
Yeah, without static pressure bench, they seem to do it. They're supposed to do move air, and the static pressure rating isn't crazy high for a radiator, but you know, they seem to do what they're supposed to. These ones, there's a ring built around that's attached to the edges of the blades themselves, so that's supposed to be better for pushing the flow straight down, which probably works. But yeah, mostly to me, the thing that stands out is how brilliant they look, so good on them for that. The pump looks good. The tubing is I actually know the thing I noticed was it's very supple, it's very flexible, and it's long, so you can easily install this in any part of your case, and then still
the
attach
one thing
it.
I liked about the Krakens from NZXT was like the tubing was a little bit longer. That way, I was actually able to use it on my test benches because nothing like no other AIO would fit. So I like that because you know. You might have a small case, you might have a big case, and sometimes you want to mount this in a certain place. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you won't be able to do it. So I like that.
A lot of AIOs are not front mountable, you couldn't mount them in the front of the case because it's just too short. This one should be good.
Yeah.
Unless you're running something massively full tower, but most of you are probably not. It's got some cool design cues on the pump itself. It's just they really stepped up the design to me. The thing that I liked this cooler, it really stood out to me because of the aesthetics. Like, it was just a neat looking cooler. The installation process got streamlined a little bit. They changed some things up. Unfortunately, we only received four fan screws with it, thumb screws, which
is
a pretty big quality control issue.
So for mounting the fans on the radiator, Derek only got four screws, and I was like, he like messaged me about it. I was like, that's really weird because as a consumer, you can't just go buy those screws or have extras. Like, luckily we had extras because we've tested, you know, and Derek might even had extras from other radiator installations that might not have been the same ones, but to not have them. You buy this on Amazon or Newegg and you get it and you're excited. And then you're like, how do I attach this other fan? Yeah. Because those aren't like normal screws you buy in a store.
Not at all.
Because they're long. They go through the fan and then into the radiator. Yeah. So yeah, that is a quality control issue. I don't know why you wouldn't have got, you know,
I don't know. It's probably a mistake, but like even on the early run, you would expect them to kind of have that under control. But so that was unfortunate. Yeah. We were able to continue testing because I had some from previous coolers. But yeah, unfortunate. Performance wise, this left a bit to be desired. It's not bad, but it's certainly not. It's not even performing up with the Asetek coolers, which I don't even have high. Don't even hold the Asetek's in like super high regard. They're pretty generic, even though they're the ones that Corsair uses. They're still, to me, just very, I don't know, kind of basic, right? Don't tend to be the best of the best, but this was lagging even behind them a little bit, so that's a little unfortunate. But it's that balance though. So if you have a system that you know you're not gonna like go crazy with the overclock, you want a 24/7, you know, sort of deal. And you're just gonna game a lot. This is probably fine. It's gonna look great. Like this is a really good gaming kit.
And the thing is too is if you are in, we always talk about this ecosystem. If you are in the Cooler Master ecosystem with your RGB fan, say you already have a Cooler Master case or even a different case with Cooler Master RGB fans, you're going to be able to control everything in their software. That's the big thing.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know what I mean? So, not the fans. They integrate. There's plenty of wiring. Like, this is the most wiring, right? Like, of any AI I've tested, it's got so much wiring, which is cool because it covers every need that you'll have. But the fans don't, like, they don't plug in, they don't go into the software. So you have no hardware control still. So that's kind of odd.
So there's no software control for the fans? No,
they plug into your motherboard. Like, it's a 4-pin. So, like, yes, there's technically software control-ish, but not any more than we've ever had for the past, 10 years now? So.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's kind of odd.
Does look like a good-looking cooler, though.
Yeah. And the hub is sweet. Like, if you were adding fans and RGB stuff to your case, the hub is, it's got plenty of expansion and options, and it's magnetic, so it just sticks to the back of the case, and it's a cool device. But at the end of the day, I gave this a 7 out of 10 because it just doesn't perform up there. It looks cool, but it just doesn't quite perform. So yeah, it's a mixed bag, right? It's not a bad product, but it's not going to be your overclock cooling system. Your high overclock.
Gotcha. And I think that's how most of these are these days. Or at least some of them. You know what I mean? Like, you know. You said it was a little bit loud?
It was a little louder too, yeah. There was I forget what it measured at. Let me get over to that screen. It was, you had to do the translation, 77 decibels. Right above it. So, like, maybe 10, 15 away, you're a couple feet away from it. So not super loud, but not quiet, like not like gone in the background. I knew it was there. Right. So, and the pitch wasn't the best. That's kind of how I measure them. I kind of like give my personal, like, this is what it sounded like. Listen to it. The pitch was too hummy. The best ones are when the fans kind of have a whooshing sound to them. You know what I mean? Like that blends in the background a lot better. And then this also had a bit of an audible dip. So I don't know if that was just a voltage thing or what, but there was a dip to it that you could hear. So.
Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Well, check out all of our reviews, our past 4 reviews. Really cool stuff.
Oh, we didn't mention that this is on a whole new test rig too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We had like 30 something coolers on the last system for years for AIOs, and now we've finally upgraded this to a 4790K Haswell. So, that was kind of fun. It's super sensitive to heat.
Yeah. So this processor, it is older. I mean, it's a 4th generation i7. But it's one of the hottest processors, well, besides the 9900K. but it's one of the hottest processors that's like normal running. And if you don't have good cooling on it, just like the 9900K, it will have those issues. So that's why we chose this, is because it's, again, when it came out, it was like, this is like the enthusiast. It's just like they did with the 9900K. Basically made a part that they shouldn't have made. More or less, because it runs really hot.
Yeah, it's a bit beyond. Yeah. This is a part where if it wasn't for a test system, you'd probably want to delete it and put some better thermal paste in there, better solder.
So we'll be throwing a bunch of new coolers, AIOs at this part, and we'll have all that stuff for you as we go through into the holiday season. It'd be kind of fun.
Yes.
So our other stuff this week, I did want to talk about that Aorus Gen 4 NVMe SSD. I made a video on it, so you can check that out on the YouTube. The link is in the show notes. And then for Case Mod Friday, we have a really cool build. So a while back, we reviewed the Western Digital, the WD Black SN750 NVMe SSD with that awesome heatsink that was designed by EK. It was one of the cooler looking products I reviewed. Well, somebody made a case that looks exactly like that heatsink, although it does say WD Black a bunch bigger and all that stuff. Yeah. But they made a case that looks exactly like this, a custom made case that looks like this heatsink. And of course they decked it out with hardware, water cooled inside with EK stuff, obviously. And it's the newer EK block. I forget what it's called, with the cool designs on it as well. And this is done by BP Store, which is out of Vietnam, I think. So not a ton of information made available, but really cool build. I love that custom case. There's some really awesome custom wiring on this as well. Just a really, really cool job and a cool theme build after a product. So it looks pretty awesome to me.
Yeah, and to be a little more specific, it's the front panel cover that is made to look like that drive cooler.
Yes.
Or the heatsink, yes, I guess, so. For that drive. So, yeah, so that whole front is like the stripe wave pattern that looks pretty sick.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the fact that, of course, there's EK parts in there for the water cooling. There is a custom, I think, res at the back. There wasn't a whole lot of photos online of this, so I can't really tell. But I think there is a custom res at the back. Just a good build. The new Corsair Dominator is in there. Of course, a WD Black SN750. This is a mini ITX on a Strix board too.
Kind of an interesting internal layout in that it's like a front and back panel, but like the tray is set in the center almost, so that it's divided evenly, and then the motherboard and the drive are on one side, and then you flip it to the other side, and you've got the graphics card and the power supply and the pump. So that's pretty cool. And then, yeah, like the back panel, it looks like it's an acrylic, like one of those sandwich acrylic panels on the whole back panel. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just good. The hard tubing is good. It's black.
Yep.
Which is, you know, it's this is mainly made to show off the hard drive. I'm assuming that's why the graphics card's on the opposite side that you don't see.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, like I said, just a cool build. One of the cooler theme, like product, what do you want to call this, like product showcase builds, sure, that we've seen. It's just like, it just makes sense for Western Digital. Like it's just a really cool just really cool build.
So if this wasn't commissioned by Western Digital, I hope that they're buying it from them.
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
Because that's like something that's, I mean, I guess you could build a case like that yourself, but I mean, I just don't know why you would.
The machining would be really expensive.
And the fact that, like, the graphics card isn't even, it's on the back panel, which is closed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not really shown off. Like, the drive is what they're showing off, I assume. So, yeah, I think this was commissioned by Western Digital. But whatever the case, it's an awesome build. But, yeah, we have our full section of Case Mod Friday builds on the site. So you can go ahead and look through and just get ideas or see, you know, what's possible. If you want to take a lot of time to build your system, you can go ahead and do that. And we'll move to news and a lot of gaming related things this week. We'll start out with NVIDIA, and we have a few stories from NVIDIA this week. The first one is that in the recent NVIDIA's latest earnings call, their CEO said that basically buying a GPU in 2019 is crazy. And you know, if you're buying a new GPU, buying one without ray tracing is crazy. And
I've got a thought on this. What's yours?
I know that we talked about it previously, that there will be games that will come out that require a ray tracing GPU. This is years off, but with another story that we'll talk about towards the end of the podcast, NVIDIA is throwing so much money at ray tracing. You will see, I know for a fact, because NVIDIA has the money to throw around, you will see a AAA title that will require ray tracing. It won't be soon, but it will be in the next 3 to 4 years. That being said, right now, you don't need a GPU with ray tracing. Like, you don't. We talk about the performance hit because it is a performance hit of, depending on the resolution, anywhere between 15 to 30 FPS that you're going to drop by enabling ray tracing. Secondly, it's kind of buggy sometimes, especially like when it first came out, it was really buggy. It's beautiful, but it's not needed. If you're just playing esports titles, you wouldn't have it. Like if you're playing multiplayer online games, you're not going to enable ray tracing because you're going to take the performance hit. So like if you're that type of gamer, you don't need a RTX card. You can use a GTX card or you can use a Radeon card. Like you don't need it in 2019. But anyways, what's your opinion?
I don't know if you know this or not, but in the year 2019, the one we're currently in, NVIDIA released a card series, GTX 1600.
Yeah, 1600
which,
series.
No, which doesn't tracing. Actually have ray tracing, so are you saying don't buy your own product, Jensen? Like, what?
I think he wants you to buy the more expensive
box. Certainly does.
Yeah.
Why even release it? And then the problem comes in, like, I don't know why they even built an RTX like 2060. What the ray tracing on a card that with that low performance is gonna just suck the life out of your gameplay.
1080p with ray tracing on at over 60 FPS in certain titles.
In certain titles.
Asterisks. Yeah. Asterisks. Yeah, I mean, like I said, and the thing is like most of us, I haven't played a single player game in a long time. Like taking up a lot of my time. Like I might have just like throw it on for a little bit, but like look at all the games that we play, like you and I have played. They're all online multiplayer games that we're playing with our friends, and we want the fastest frame rate possible, you know, depending on our hardware. So why would I turn on a feature that takes away from that? I wouldn't. You know what I mean? So I like, again, you know, this is in their earnings call. He's obviously trying to...
He has to make things sound great been making, for them.
Yeah, they've been making this push for RTX since it came out. They had to try to get people to understand the technology. Yeah. Then they had to get developers to put it in their games. And then they had to fix all the games that they put in because it didn't work correctly. Then they had to work on performance issues. And now they're trying to just get this acceptance of it. Like,
well, yeah, now they're trying to build an environment in which you need it.
Yeah,
they're creating the need for their product is essentially what they're doing.
Yeah, so that's not a good business plan.
No, that's costly.
You know, again, ray tracing is great. I played Battlefield with ray tracing on. It looks awesome. But the only way I would play Battlefield in that environment is if I was playing the single player campaign. That's it. So if you're a single player person and the title that you want to play has ray tracing, yes, you should buy a ray tracing enabled card. But if you're not, especially if you're playing online games, you don't want that to be turned on. Like, you just don't. No. So that was kind of a funny comment that came out of that. But NVIDIA did release a driver for Gamescom, or like they're calling it the Gamescom driver. And they've added a lot of really cool stuff in it. One, they've improved performance in games. This is their data, but I've seen a lot of people test it, and it's pretty close. That you're in certain games you'll get up to 23% faster performance than the previous driver, which is really good. I love that. We always talk about, like, you know, hardware and stuff, but there is a lot that can be done in software and optimization. And it's good that NVIDIA is taking this like thing, and I hopefully this becomes a thing where, like, they release a, you know how AMD has their big driver thing? What's it called?
I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, like, maybe Gamescom is the time where NVIDIA does this big driver rollout where you get more features. So, like I said, the first thing is better performance in certain titles. And they have all, we have all the graphs there to show you. The next thing is their new ultra low latency stuff for faster input response. And we have the graph there that shows you that. And then the next thing is their GPU integer scaling, or sharper upscaling for retro and pixel art games. We talked about upscaling. And this was a big thing. The way they're doing it is, it's really hard to explain, and I'm not going to try to. But basically, they've beat Intel and AMD at this GPU integer scaling, the technology and everything like that. So if you are playing games like Hotline Miami or something, or even Terraria, which is an amazing game if you haven't played it, I've spent many hours playing that game, and you want to play it at a higher resolution, typically it would look kind of blurry, just like we talked about. But with this new integer scaling technology or whatever they're doing, it looks good. It looks sharp. And they do have a picture there that you can see, but it's something that, you know, if you do have a Turing GPU, you'll get advantage of doing it. They've also added a new filter. So you'll be, there's like filters that you can use in GeForce Experience now for your games. Like there's a sharpening filter and things like that.
Feels like Instagram.
Yeah, right. And they did add in the game Ready Driver now, there's 30-bit color support. So that was in their studio driver, but now it's in all of them. So a lot of updates. And there's other stuff too. Like they've added a bunch of new profiles for new games that are out, you know, for better performance. They've validated new G-Sync displays with the software as well. So just a big update. You can read through all of the stuff in detail. I know I didn't go over everything in detail, but a lot of stuff there. If you do play certain games, you will make use of it or in things like that. So just check. We have the full press release with all of the pictures and all the graphs and everything. So if you are using a newer RTX card, you can take advantage of a lot of this stuff. So cool stuff there from NVIDIA doing stuff to, you know, help gamers out. And we'll move over to CPUs. And this is really interesting. And we've talked about it a little bit and we've heard about it a lot, is that Ryzen 3000 series CPUs don't have a whole lot of overclocking headroom. They just don't. I think a lot of these higher core parts do not, because you're trying to take a lot of cores and run them at higher speeds. But basically, Silicon Lottery is a online retailer. And what they do is they buy a bunch of parts and they overclock them and they guarantee an overclock. So they find the highest bin parts and they'll guarantee, like when you buy the chip, you know, they'll give you the settings and they'll say this will run at a 24/7 overclock at a certain certain speed and certain vCore. And theirs are not like crazy vCores like we use when we overclock just to see how high we can get. This is like a 24/7
overclock.
Yeah. Yeah, proper overclock, a proper 24/7, what you would run it as. And then they sell these processors for higher cost. So in their data, all the Ryzen 9 3900X that they've used and put through and did all this, only 6% of them are able to reach 4.2 gigahertz on all of the 12 cores, which isn't all that impressive.
Small amount. Very.
Now, the... Go ahead.
No, I was just reiterating. Go on.
Yes, very, very, very small amounts. And that, you know, the chip does boost to 4.6 gigahertz, and that's only on select cores and only at certain times. Even in our testing, it would boost to like 4.42. It was very rare that we saw the chip boost to 4.6 on any cores.
Yeah.
It would mostly boost to 4.0 on a lot of cores and sometimes 4.2. So that's just some interesting data. It's kind of cool that Silicon Lottery is like putting this data out there. But they are selling a 4.2 gigahertz on all 12 cores at, I think it's one point. Let me see what the vCore is on it. The 4.2 gigahertz at 1.25 volts, which is very good.
Yeah.
They're selling it for $839. So that's well over the $399 price on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know it's going to do it. And all this data only goes to support the fact that these are rare and that this is worth $839.
Yeah. Especially, like I said, again, like I overclocked mine to 4.3 or 4.4, but that was on like 1.4.
Which is going like, to burn your chip up.
Yeah, if I'm running at a 24/7 overclock, it's not going to hold up. And I would never run a 24/7 overclock at that. It was just to see how high I could actually get. Yeah,
give it all the voltage.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's really interesting. And again, this is like one of the downfalls of this, the Ryzen 3000 series. We praise it so much. It is great. But if you're an overclocker, it's not that great. Because you're not going to get that extra headroom.
Like, no, it's right at its limit so that they can brag about it. Well, it's not brag, so they can advertise it, right? It's just yeah. right at the limit, and the limits are going to be smaller from base to top overclock. Yeah, like you said, there's more cores in there. You're trying to get more power to more places at this in a smaller space. That's all there is to it. The speed is going to suffer unless there's some sort of like change in power delivery, which is very unlikely. I mean, graphene was one of the things that was said to maybe allow us to do more with this, but it still seems like it's a future material. So at this point, we're dealing with silicon and the physics of silicon, and this is just what it is. At least we have higher performance due to core count.
Yeah, and I think too is like they have pushed these, like you said, to kind of like the limit mm-hmm. because they wanted it to be a good part. Like a lot of times, especially in the past with Intel, like the part could run 24/7 so much higher, but they just didn't because they didn't need to. You know, with a competition, yeah. you want to put it at its top, what it can do.
Well, this part needs to come out, and it needs to bench at a certain place, right? And that yeah. doesn't involve an overclock. So, I mean, that is what it is.
Yeah. A new X299 motherboard came out.
I was wondering.
We haven't heard Intel high-end desktop stuff for a while. And this board is awesome. So it's from Asus. It's their ROG Rampage 6 Extreme Encore, which effectively will replace the Rampage 6 Extreme, but it's a step lower than the Extreme Omega. This is an EATX board. It has everything. Mm-hmm. But it's basically from the Rampage 6 Extreme. It has taken out the U2 port, which nobody used for the most part. But it added it's one of the first boards to have the 20 gigabit USB 3.2 Gen 2x2. That sounds so stupid. sorry, I hate that we're calling, this could just be called USB 3.2, but instead it's called USB 3.2 Gen 2x2, which basically combines two 10 gigabit ports into one. And we'll talk about a product that's going to use that as we go along in our news here. So they've added that. They also upgraded the Wi-Fi. So you're getting Wi-Fi 6 or 802.11ax. They've rewired the VRM. And I think most of the things are the same. And they've also redesigned the GPU layout. So they're spaced how you would like. It's just a better spacing. It's the same spacing. Or it's actually different spacing than they used on the Omega, but yeah. it's just better spaced. This board has everything, like literally. If you're looking at Intel high-end desktop, it's cool to see a board come out this late and them like add new things. Because there are a lot of people who want to build still. I mean, X299 is pretty old in our whole upgrade cycle type thing. But there are a lot of new technologies that have came out, USB 3.2, like I said, Wi-Fi 6 and things like that, that, you know, people want.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's cool to see them redo that. The board looks awesome. I want it. It's just awesome. So check out that. It's going to be very expensive. It's supposed to be priced at $649.99. So not cheap at all. Yeah. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. Part of Gamescom, one of the coolest things that I saw, which I said I put on Twitter, is take all my money. Alienware showed off a 55-inch OLED 120Hz 4K monitor. We've seen NVIDIA try to do their big format gaming displays.
Is that 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was when they made like first stall. We've seen a few come out. It's just, I don't know. I'd like to have one, but I wouldn't want to spend the money, put it that way. Yeah. But this is actually a monitor. It's not a big format gaming display. It doesn't have the NVIDIA stuff in it. But it's, like I said, 55 inches.
In fact, it's FreeSync, which is interesting.
It's FreeSync. Yeah, it's FreeSync. It's 4K. It is OLED. It should look amazing. All the pictures that I've seen of this thing, it looks awesome.
The 4K 120Hz OLED, that's an interesting thing right there. That's a monitor that a lot of people have been waiting for, actually. But obviously not in a 55-inch form factor. It's just crazy.
Yeah, 55-inch is pretty big.
It's a TV.
It's so thin besides the bottom part that has the connections and other little hardware.
All of the bits.
Some speakers in there.
Yeah.
If you look at the back, they've done a great job with cable management, which some people forget about when they design displays. Yeah. Great cable management. It does have a little RGB on the back that you can control with their software. The monitor does come with a remote, which is a little odd for a monitor, but you can do some cool stuff there.
You're going to be sitting display. A little ways away from it, so reaching up and touching the control panel button is probably not going to be very easy if you don't have that.
You can do all that stuff. You can also display your current FPS on the screen. I don't know how they're doing that.
But what do you mean? What do you mean by that? Because that's something that we all do with fraps and stuff now.
Yeah, so I don't know how that's built into display, but you can do that.
Just like at all times, the display's rendering.
Yeah,
it?
The display's. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how that's done. We're getting this secondhand from people who have seen this. So I don't know how it's being done. It's built into the display. There's also different gaming modes built in the display. Not a whole lot of information on them. I assume like one's for FPS, one's for RTS, like all that stuff. The display is not cheap. It will be $4,000 and it will be available September 30th. It is part of, one good thing is part of Dell's premium panel exchange program. So if you have any issues, whether it's a dead pixel, a pixel that's too bright, anything, you can exchange it. No problem. As long as it's still under warranty. It looks awesome. It's something I'd love to have, but I would never pay that much money for it. No. It's one of the first, this would be like a first gen product, I would say. I mean, we've seen OLED screens before in TVs, but for a monitor, a gaming monitor with that high refresh rate, FreeSync, all that stuff, this is like a first thing. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that's interesting is that the brightness is, I forget, I didn't even put it in the article, but the brightness is, I think it's only listed at 600 nits, maybe 400, which isn't all that bright compared to like HDR displays, which go up to 1,000 nits. And I think that the Apple display that's 6,000?
5,000. 6,000 if you want to stand for it.
Yeah, 6,000 if you want to stand for it. I think that is 1,200 nits. So that's something to think about. But from all of the articles that I read about this, it looks amazing. It's just, it's not something I would ever probably get because I wouldn't. If I was spending $4,000, I'd be building like an ultimate editing rig.
I mean, that's us though. Of that, Apple is 1,000 nits and it's 1,600 peak brightness. So,
yeah. So yeah, so really cool.
It's cool, but it's so impractical for most people. I don't know. I'm kind of confused why they would even build it. Other than they're really investing in living room gaming, that might be the only thing that I think would cause me to choose this. So
yeah, I would like to see it. Pictures, especially when it comes to OLED, like don't do it justice,
right?
So I would really like to see this. We probably will see it at CES, but I
mean, it'll be old by then.
Wonder
who builds the panel too.
I'm guessing Samsung. Samsung builds all the panels.
That's not true.
They build
a lot of panels, but yeah.
Yeah, they do. Or maybe Sony might build the panel. I don't know. I don't know who actually like builds the glass. But a really cool product. If you haven't seen it yet, you should take a look at it. There's a ton of articles online about it.
Yep.
And Fantex, they finally released their Entholux 2. We got a sneak preview of it. It wasn't done yet at CES. It's finally out. If you're not familiar, the Entholux is like their big, just their massive case, I would say.
It's just a big full tower. It's not their massive case because they've got that one that's like a four system. But what is that one? It doesn't matter, but... yeah, they've got that one. This one is just a big full tower. It's like the Primo when that came out. It's kind of a replacement for that.
I mean, this can do full-size motherboards, EATX and SSI EEB, which is even bigger. You can do dual 480 and dual 360 radiators. Storage for up to 12 hard drives or 11 SSDs. Or 12. I don't know if it's 12. I think it's 12 hard drives or 11 SSDs. I don't think it's both.
Both would be crazy.
Yeah.
Dude, hard drives. Why 12 hard drives?
That's I think they just have the space. Because remember, we like we eliminate that front section, right? Yeah. Of most cases. So this is dual system, so you can do a
mini down below, full up top. Is that what that is?
Yeah, yeah. Mini down below, full up top. Or you can do a mini on the other side, I believe, too. Possibly. Oh, okay. I forget how it's set up. But this is like their big thing. It should be available now. $189.99, which isn't super expensive for, I feel like, what you're getting.
It's actually cheap, right? For a flagship full tower case.
Yeah.
Because usually now, I mean, nowadays especially, but these cases are not the most sought after, and they're usually up into the 200s.
But if you remember from CES, the big thing with this, it ships with no fans. So you're looking, even if you buy cheap fans, say you just did two in the front and one in the top, no and one RGBs. In the rear, like no RGBs, like how much would that cost? Probably still
at least $15 a fan, at least. And those are not so, really good fans. So
45. You're adding another 45 to 50 with tax, yeah. Right? So you're adding another 50 onto that. So there goes your.
You're in your 200 now.
But I actually like that they do that, because most people building an extreme system like this, they're not going to use the fans that come with the case.
No.
For the most part.
And that's what we talked about with them at CES was, well, I'm just going to pull those out anyways. The second I go to put my custom water cooling loop in there, I'm not using those three case fans that you shipped with it. So you'd rather save that money up front.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is like, there's certain cases over the years that I've wanted, right? I've really wanted them, and I'm going to spend the money on them. So why would I pay $250 when, without the fans, I can pay $189?
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I really like that move by them. It shows they, like, understand, like, builders.
They understand who's going to buy this, right?
Yeah. And they make the option available. Just like the Corsair case that I reviewed, the bigger one, there was no other option. You had to get it with the RGB fans. Mm-hmm. No other option for a fanless version. No other option for other fans, other Corsair fans. You had to get it with the RGB fans and the RGB controller, which made it $250, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Because then you're choosing to add that cost of those really expensive RGB fans. And like, who says that I even want to use your ARGB fans? Maybe I don't even like the fans you're putting in the case, even though they're expensive fans. I don't want those, and I'm gonna need a bunch more now. Like, I'm stuck with those. What do I even do with those?
So I like that move. It's just so smart. It just makes sense. Yeah. So if you're looking to build, and the thing is, they really market this towards streamers who want two systems, mm-hmm, in one case. But even if you're just building a single system, I mean, this is like your ultimate storage system. This is your ultimate gaming system because you have a lot of room.
Yeah.
You know,
let's build that massive water cooled system you've always wanted, you know, multiple reservoirs and radiators at every turn.
And if you're doing water cooling, Fantex makes the, if you look at the last picture in the article, mm-hmm, they make that rear reservoir that you can put in there yourself. Sick. And they make they make all of these parts that fit into this case. So that's something to keep in mind too. If you are going to do a water cooling build, because you would have to get those custom made, but Fantex makes those.
It lets you have that custom look without having to pay custom pricing.
Exactly. So definitely check that out. It should be available now, you know, Enthu Lux 2. And what do we have here? We have Western Digital. We talked about a drive that's going to make use of that USB 3.2 2x2 mm-hmm port. And Western Digital, to the surprise, because I didn't see this coming at all, they have released a new portfolio of WD Black hard drives, which WD Black is made for gamers. That's like their new thing, and they're really marketing all this towards gamers, which makes sense because gamers make up a good population of people buying this stuff. They have five new drives, technically three, right? Yeah. I can't do math. Bob can't do math. So technically three, with two having variants for Xbox. The first one is the P50, which is an external SSD. It uses the USB 3.2 Gen 2 times 2. I hate saying that. So it's going to offer up to 2,000 megabytes a second read from an external drive, which is really, really fast. Yeah. It will be available up to 2 terabyte and come with a 5-year warranty. No word on pricing on that one. But this is, from what Western Digital explained, they're the first in industry with this. So they'll be the first one that has an external SSD that has that port on it.
That's pretty cool. So obviously cool. That's going to be NVMe inside there. Right?
I don't know.
Right? I mean, it has to be for that speed, right? Correct.
Yeah.
Like the controller and everything else. Like a traditional solid state can't hit those speeds.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, you're right. It is going to be an NVMe inside there. I don't know how it's going to be set up, whether it's just going to be like an NVMe drive on a PCB.
On a controller. Or it's gonna, yeah,
so I'm not sure. None of that data was made available. Because this one, there's no release date for this one yet. Then you have your typical portable drive.
Oh, yeah. It actually says NVMe on the front of it. So, yep, it is. Small lettering on the front,
See how much we pay attention. next to you have the P10. This is your normal portable drive, USB 3.2 Gen 1. Or USB 3.1 Gen 2, whatever you want to call it. This is available in capacities up to 5 terabytes. 3-year warranty on this. It's available now, so you should be able to pick it up. And they're going to have an Xbox version. So the 2 terabyte is $89 and the 5 terabyte is $149. That's for the PC version. There's a version for Xbox One that will be coming out soon. So they have a 3 terabyte version for $109 and a 5 terabyte version for $149. And that will come with a 2-month Xbox Game Pass Ultimate membership and a 3-year warranty. So I like how they're throwing the memberships in there for the Xbox versions.
Yeah, decent value.
And then you have the D10, and this is powered by your typical 7200 RPM, hard drive. I assume it's a WD Black that's inside there. It has active cooling. This is like your traditional big external hard drive. On the PC side, it's available up to 8 terabytes. The 8 terabyte will be $200. The Xbox One will go up to 12 terabyte and be $300. And the Xbox One will come with a 3-month Xbox Game Pass Ultimate membership. Both of these 3-year warranty. I like the design of these. It's not anything incredibly impressive, but it just like gives the whole line like the same look, which I like. And it's nice because for the longest time, the portable drives from WD were very consumer facing products. They're like what everybody would buy, right? They just didn't have like a gamier or more like aggressive look. And ever since their WD, like the SN750 kind of had that more like, wow, this is from Western Digital, because it looks nothing like they would, something they would come out with.
They've gone from like consumer facing to like aggressive, actually stylish looking stuff, which is pretty cool. I'm actually impressed that they've been able to make that switch.
Well, they're still going to have, I assume they're going to have other counterparts of these drives that are their consumer drives, like your typical, whatever they call, I can't even think of what they're, like the My Passports and stuff like that will still be there, but these are for gamers, and these will, at least the P50, like obviously that's super high performance drive. Yeah. So really cool. I like the design of all these. I would love to have any of these sitting on my desk. I love that, the portable SSD, even though I don't have a USB 3.2 Gen 2 times 2.
In fact, you've got to buy a $650 motherboard in order to make that happen.
But it's great. It's great that they have this whole line. It looks really good. Prices aren't horrible either, although we don't know the price for the P50. That should be kind of expensive. That'd be a lot. But
about $300, maybe $400.
Yeah,
depends on the capacity. Was it 2 terabyte?
Yeah, 2 terabyte.
$300.
But still really cool design. And it's good that we have those, like I said, the traditional products we're used to from Western Digital on like just a more gamer look. I like that. And I think that's something they need as for how big Western Digital is. And again, we've all used WD Blacks in our builds, right? But they were like, you know, like this gives WD like Black back in the a day, gamer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like a gamer centric thing.
Yeah. It gives it relevance to like what was once a pretty solid line that was well respected. It kind of fell away with the advent of the solid state drive and the M.2 stuff. So like it really brings it back and gives it puts it back in the modern day, I guess. So it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what else?
Yeah. Check that out. And then the two gaming things we have. First one, there's going to be a new Need for Speed game. Need for Speed Heat was announced, and it's going to come out on November 8th. Ghost Games and EA announced this game, and there's a lot of good memes about this game for EA. You know, they said that you're going to have a ton of customization, ton more cars. I grew up playing Need for Speed games, so this is like a game I'm kind of excited for. You know, they say the city is going to be called Palm City. It's called Heat because it's like kind of like Miami kind of based, you know what I mean? I think it's going to be a great game. I hope they keep like the same dynamic as they had in the previous games, and the soundtrack, which made those games so good. I hope that it's all there. But it looks good. It looks really good. It's going to be available on all platforms, so Xbox One, PlayStation 4, PC, November 8th. And if you have EA access and Origin access basic, you can have it on November 5th early. But yeah, like I said, I think it's gonna be good. I might actually get it. Hopefully they have like a demo or like a, what is it, a beta or whatever they do, a little preview for it, because I'd like to just try it out. Always big fan of Need for Speed games. And then our last piece of news is that a game that didn't need this, but it's getting it. And I can see why it's getting it. Minecraft, which is still one of the biggest games in the world, is getting official NVIDIA RTX ray tracing support. A game that
good for them.
Doesn't need it.
Good for the blockheads.
It looks
way cooler.
It looks so much better. But here's the thing, is that, again, NVIDIA developed this with Microsoft. This is one of the biggest games out there. So
they're buying their way into it.
You show this feature off to all of the people that play this game. They're like, oh, I need an RTX card for that. Okay, I'm going to buy one because I want it in this game that I play. You know what I mean? It totally makes sense for NVIDIA to do this.
Yeah,
all their RTX announcements like make sense because they want more people to use their Turing cards or their RTX Turing cards. But yeah, it just makes sense. It's kind of a funny announcement because you're like, the game is meant to look that like blocky and not good.
I mean, it does cool things that aren't there. It elevates the terrible pixels that are there. The one thing that's funny between these two between the renders though is they change the color and stuff to make it look even better, but that's another story altogether. The background colors,
the shadows and things will be better. If you're a Minecraft player and you have an RTX card, this is like a plus for you. I guess there are people out there that will buy a new card just for this.
We know a few of them, so.
yeah, we do. But I mean, if you think about it too, it's like if you're serious, this is like the game you play all the time, and you look at these screenshots and you're like, oh, holy shit, like this is going to look better.
I can
like
do this and it can also be pretty.
Ooh. Yeah. So, like I said, it makes sense for NVIDIA. We have the screenshots on the in the article, and they made a video. It's on YouTube, but we have it in the article as well, so you guys can check that all out. And, we will see what we have coming up next week. So, like I said, I will be taking a look at another 5700 series aftermarket card. This one is one that I was super excited about when I saw it. It's from MSI. It's their RX 5700 XT Evoke OC. It's that one that is champagne gold. There's not a single RGB on this. It's in that gold shroud is metal. It's not plastic. So I'll be taking a look at that. I like the card so far, but I will tell you more about it next week when we talk about it in my review. And then I'll be taking a look at another X570 motherboard. So we did all of our X570 covers. The only boards that we didn't have were from Asus. And they sent us a few boards over. The first one I'm taking a look at is their Prime X570 Pro. I absolutely love the Prime series because, one, it's affordable. Two, it has everything that you want. And three, it actually looks good. And Asus has dropped down a lot of the big features that are in the more expensive boards to the Prime series, like the attached I/O shield, RGB lighting, obviously. Like, all of these things have come down from the big one. And like I said, it's affordable and it gives most users pretty much everything that you need. So I'm pretty excited to take a look at this board and see what, you know, see what Asus has for X570. And then Ryan will be taking a look at the MXL Microphones APS Podcasting Bundle. And this is actually a pretty cool bundle. So it gives you a microphone. It gives you the stand, which I think everybody should have a stand, especially if you're podcasting, in which we've all bought, you know, stands on Amazon. And because the microphone is XLR, it has a little XLR adapter that turns your XLR mic into a USB mic, basically. So that's really cool too. So it gives you everything you need basically to start podcasting. So he'll be taking a look at that, you know, for next week as well. So if you're looking to podcast, that's a review that you might want to, you know, stay tuned for. And we talk about, you know, end of the podcast here. This has been a long one. You know, anything cool that we've seen tech related, any new gear that we've used? Have you seen anything or done anything? Or?
Nope, not really.
Nothing?
Nope.
Not a thing?
Not really. Oh, nothing new.
You said you started watching that show that I talked about a few weeks ago.
We talked about that a few weeks ago.
Yeah. On my trip, I bought some new camera gear because this was like a trip where I wanted to make sure that I got the right shots, and I wanted to make sure that I could climb up waterfalls and not have to get my camera out of my bag every time and like just have more hands free, I would say. I've been looking for a while at this Peak Design. It's called the Capture Camera Clip. And basically it's something that you put either on your belt or on like a strap of a book bag, and you clip your camera onto it and it holds it there. This is the whole thing's made of aluminum, and it was expensive. I mean, $70 for a piece of aluminum. So that's, I wouldn't say it's not cheap. You know, so I looked at it for a while and I decided to get it, and this thing made all of the difference. Being able to clip my, you know, my camera that I'm shooting on onto myself and then climb up a rock face, or clip it on and easily clip it back off to get the shot that I want and not have to put my bag down, you know, get the stuff out of my bag. Like, it's probably one of the most useful camera products that I bought in a long time. And I would, like, for somebody like you, Derek, who shoots a lot, like, I would highly recommend it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it looks cool. Looks well built.
And the biggest worry that I had, and I think most people do, is like when you have your camera clipped in there, like how secure is it? Like, I can jump up and down with my camera on there and it's completely secure, like no worries. Mm-hmm. And it uses an Arca Swiss plate at the like that you attach to your camera, and you can buy adapters that go on everything. So now I can hot swap between all of my tripods and my gimbal and everything with just this one plate. So it just, I like it.
So yeah, set up.
Yeah. We'd be very good to use this when we're at CES. So I don't have to, you know, drop my bag down, pull out my camera, connect everything. Like, it will just be pretty easy to use that way. Nice. But yeah, Peak Design, they make some really cool stuff. I heard good things about they make camera bags and things like that as well. So I've heard very good things about all their stuff. Ends our podcast for this week. Sorry, a little bit rusty. We took a week off, but of course you can find us on all of your favorite podcasting apps or websites. It's just Think Computers, all one word. And as always, we will have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about, all the links, so you can go ahead and click through and get even more information. So until next week, catch you guys later.